Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 84 of Little Things for Bonsai People. And it is the year 2024, the year of the wood dragon, and that means that we're going to have... Wait a second. This is different from the last time I looked at it. The wood dragon...
I think that changed it.
No, I know. But the wood elements symbolize power, vitality, and growth.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read another dragon type on another episode, but it doesn't matter. No one's really, now that everyone's going to know. But anyway, it is the year of the wood dragon. And if you can't hear my co-host already, I am joined by Carmen Leskovinsky. How's it going, Carmen?
It's my birthday.
And it's her birthday. At the time of this recording, it's her birthday, but we'll be a little way out. Lays out. Yeah. But yeah, happy birthday to you,
Thank
Carmen.
You.
So how old do you feel?
Well, I don't actually feel any older, but I know that the numbers keep going up. So, yeah. You know, it's fine.
You never ask somebody how old they are. You just kind of check in and see how they're feeling mentally.
that's a nice way to do it.
Yeah. You never really want to do that to somebody because, I mean, I've met some people who are getting older in age, but they are still so, you know, so young and so... forward thinking for their, you know, for how, you know, where they're at in their life. Mm-hmm. Everyone's on a different walk of life. So got to just check in. So, but mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been taking it easy for your birthday today?
Yeah, I actually took the day off, which is almost unheard of. Yeah, it's been super fun. We went downtown to grab some coffee. We were going to do some antiquing, but my kid called home sick from school. So we had to postpone that. But, got a good birthday nap in and just kind of hanging out. So yeah. It's been a good day so far.
This is what happens for all of our younger listeners, like our younger listeners under like 30 years old, where they're like, my birthday, and they go out and they party or they have like a drink with friends or something. When you get
go like antiquing, like yeah. I'm at that age, like, oh, it's my birthday. Let's go antiquing.
Let's go walk around and window shop, and that sounds like an awesome day. And then take a nice nap or just stare at a wall and not do anything. That sounds like a great time. But yeah. Anyway, so we on topic today, we were thinking about talking about Japanese black pine, their care techniques on growing them, and styles they're appropriate for. Kind of like the care guide series thing that we've been doing recently. If we've got a little bit of time, we'd like to also be for kind of like a birthday special for Carmen. We're going to talk about our favorite bonsai things and then follow them up with hot takes. So some handshake and then backhanded, slaps. and then we'll go from there. If we have enough time, we'll see where we get to. But I know we say that every once in a while, we're like, we're going to get to it later. And sometimes
just never do.
Yeah, but we'll do it.
Eventually we'll get to it. It just might not be this episode or the next episode.
Yeah, we're
or
a weekly
the next
show.
10 episodes, like eventually.
Yeah. And we better get to certain things before episode 100, you know, before the ultimate pizza party.
Pizza party.
For every time that you subscribe or share one of our episodes to one of your friends, me and Carmen will eat a slice of pizza. No, pizza crust. I will eat my pizza and then eat the crust because I'm really bad at doing that. So
I don't always eat the crust either unless it's got like, it's often too dry. You know, you really need to like get some butter or
it's
something.
It's just more bread. It doesn't have anything on it. That's why. Anyway, before we get into any other shenanigans or talking about our actual topics, we do need to mention that this show is sponsored by our amazing patrons over on patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there, become a bonsai best bud, and hang out in the Discord with these amazing people. And now that we have so many patrons, I always read them at the end now, but we do have a featured best bud, and that's going to be Barry's Bonsai. Thank you so much for sponsoring at the $5 level. And we'll do a shout out, an individual shout out every episode from now on. Of course, we have our main podcast show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. We did have John on, two episodes ago to talk about him taking over Josh Roth Tools and his other interests. He has a lot of interests. If you guys want to go back and listen to the episode or if you already heard it, John is a man of many colors, let's say that, because he's into this is something that I didn't get to mention to you, Carmen, because you missed out on doing that recording, was that he's like not just in a bonsai, he's into carnivorous plants, orchids, aquariums, herpetology.
I talked to him. I was on a call with him about a month or so ago, and he was telling me that he's just got all these special interests, and I was like, how does he even keep everything straight? I don't understand. It's so much stuff, but it's really cool.
Yeah, he's like the president or on the board of like all these clubs for all these things he likes. It's pretty insane.
Isn't it like 65 or something? I don't know. There's like a ton of them.
Yeah, there's an insane amount of stuff. But anyway, we have our specimen best buds. We mentioned them at the beginning of episodes as well. Unrai UN Bonsai Garden, Christina Corforia and Bill Butler, Bill's Bayou, our anchor bonsai best bud and specimen bud. Before we can get any further, can't go much further without thanking Matt, our editor, Matt O'Donnell. Makes us sound smart and cleans up our audio, and it makes us enjoyable to listen to. You can go over to mattodonnell.com and contact him via email or our Instagram. He's also on Instagram as well, and under the same name, and then you can start your own podcast show or audio engineering project with him. He's a set basis living in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's an all-around awesome guy. I say it every single time, and check out Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know, his podcast show. Anyway, so we were going to talk about Japanese black pines as well, like one of the requests for the birthday host / birthday girl today.
Woo!
We wanted to talk about Japanese black pine.
Sure.
And like they're basically their care guide and their significance in bonsai, et cetera, et cetera. So go ahead and start us off, Carmen. Why do you want to talk about Japanese black pine?
Because I've been doing a lot of Japanese black pine work the last couple of weeks, and so I thought it would be a good opportunity to kind of sit down and go through kind of what you do with this tree during what time of year, because they are one of the more complicated pines that we use in bonsai, but they're also very popular. So, do you have any? You have black pine, don't you?
Yes, believe it or not, Japanese black pine grows fairly well in Southeast Louisiana and South and like in our part of the country as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're kind of a coastal tree in their native range. So they really kind of like the humidity. They like the heat. Back in Michigan, back east, they're one of the trees that we actually do have to give a little bit more winter protection to. So even though it's a pine, it's kind of a warmish pine as far as, you know, not wanting to be frozen through all winter long. So here in Portland, you know, they can stay on the ground, but we will protect them when it gets really chilly. Back on the East Coast or, you know, in the northern climates, they do need to be protected over winter because they don't like their roots to freeze through. So kind of different for what we're used to with pines.
Yeah, they because you said they're a little bit more coastal, they have some subtropical tendencies as well. And I know people as far as mid Florida, like close to the equator, they'll even grow, I mean, multiple flushes in one year because they're known as a double flush pine.
Right.
And so there's other pines like the red pines and white pines and a couple of other various native pine trees, also like the ponderosa and the limber pine. These are all single flushes. Whereas Japanese black pine, and there's very, very few other pines that are capable of doing this where they can double flush, which is extremely unique because that helps us make a more refined, faster building process for bonsai.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting because we call them double flush pines, but like if you just had them out in nature, they would be single flush like, you know, other pines. But because they can do a double flush if you force them to, that's how we get the tiny needles and the level of refinement that we can get with black pine. So it's kind of a fun species to be able to manipulate it so much, but it does require kind of a specialized technique that can be confusing to say the least, and really fun when you finally understand it. So
yeah, they're I think the I think the story or the legend is that there was a bonsai grower in Japan that he had apparently had a good number of Japanese black pines.
Yeah.
And then one day he found that caterpillars had gone out to his garden and eaten all the new shoots, like all the new candles off of his black pines.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh God, because like usually that could be a death,
death sentence for your tree.
For most of them, yeah. Because single flush pines, I don't get a lot of single flush pines in Louisiana that are good for working here. So from my understanding, single flush pines, you get the candle, it comes out, you have to let it elongate, you can remove second year needles, and then you can prune back where you can, basically. Whereas you can remove some candles to help reduce energy too, down to two, but you can't really cut them all the way off like we can with a double flush.
Yeah, with the single flush, you can break your candles to kind of slow your growth down, to shorten the elongation and to push back budding. This works better on some single flush species than others, but you're not going to get the same response if you cut all of your candles off that you're going to get with a black pine. Especially if you do it regularly, you're going to really hurt your tree and eventually probably kill it. But you can break candles on single flush to reduce shoot size or shoot length. But usually, like, kind of the goal with your single flush is to get to a point where the energy is so well balanced and the tree is so refined that it kind of just does what it needs to do every year and elongates just enough. And like, you don't really have to continually maintain all of your new growth the same way that you always have to do it with the black pine. So, because we've got some single flush in the yard where, you know, we barely ever have to break a candle off or shorten a candle. Because they're so refined that their energy is, you know, they just put out a short shoot with short needles. That's all you get. The other ones in development, you know, their needles will be short and long on the same tree. And some of those longer ones will reduce to balance the energy. But once you get to a certain point of refinement, everything kind of balances out and you just get kind of short shoots, short needles. So,
yeah, well, you would say that single flush pines are relatively simple to maintain once they've got to that point then.
Yeah, single flush pines are probably like the easiest bonsai.
Yeah.
I think. Like I have done the least work on single flush pines because they really don't require that much once they're styled. And
yeah,
once they've kind of gotten into a level of maturity, it's much more, you know, kind of routine maintenance with them than a lot of processes to continue development and refinement and all of that.
Yeah. Whereas with the double flush pine, this is where things get a little like a little bit hairy, literally and figuratively, because my experience with double flushes is that yes, you can decandle them, which decandling, like Carmen was mentioning earlier, where she said you can break the candles on single flushes to slow them down. Where we decandle up Japanese black pine is where we completely remove those new shoots. Whereas those candles, we call them that because they're white in color and they tend to stand up straight and tall and they extend out and then the needles come out of them after they extend. And so with a single flush, yeah, you can break it and tell the tree, like, don't extend anymore. Just make me some needles there and then we'll be fine. Whereas when you do that to a Japanese black pine, it will quadruple the number of candles that back bud off of that branch or even in that same spot. And it just gets out of hand sometimes. And then they overproduce needles and then they'll overcrowd themselves and then they'll get weak. So you kind of have to, yeah, it's a huge, and then you'll get these giant needles if you don't control the big, long, strong candles. It gets really out of control.
We have some outrageous candles in the yard this year. We've changed our fertilizer over the last couple of years and really kind of beefed up the amount of fertilizer we've been giving the black pine by, I don't know, a factor of a million. And we've got at least one candle out there on a, granted it's on like a runner. We're letting, you know, the top of this pine run, but the candle's 2 feet long. Like it's the biggest candle I've ever seen in my life. We had to, you know, usually we don't do anything with the black pine candles until we're ready to go in and decandle the pine. But this year we actually had to go and pinch some of the candles on the black pines 2 weeks before we went to decandle them, because otherwise they were going to just keep growing, keep getting stronger. And I've never had to do that before. So we had candles on, you know, refined trees that were 6 inches long that we were like, okay, we got to at least, we got to shorten this, because otherwise it's going to be so out of control. So it's really good. The pines are strong, but it was also like, whoa, maybe we need to dial the fertilizer down just a smidge. Yeah. But
and black pines are weird too, because a lot of people will say that you shouldn't overwater pine trees, especially single flush, because that will give you some adverse, effects like that cause them to, I mean, pine trees as is, they don't like wet feet, So, but a Japanese black pine, being, like I said earlier, it was like kind of like a subtropical tendency where you could water them a good bit here in Louisiana, because we do have a dry humid and they like that. And so you water them and they fertilize them. And that just encourages them to pump up these big giant candles like you're talking about. I'm sure that's kind of what you guys are experiencing. Well, because it's kind of Portland gets like, you guys should be are y'all in the 80s yet?
Not yet. We've actually had a cooler spring this year, but we're going to hit 80 on Wednesday. Oh, that's tomorrow. Maybe on Thursday, we're going to hit 80. Like, I think we're headed into the summer weather now. Like, I think this is the last rain we're having, and then it'll probably be hot and sunny for the next 3 months starting this week. So, but even so, with the spring weather we've had, they've been drying out pretty regularly. And, you know, most of the time they need water once a day, sometimes twice if it's really sunny. So, they are, as far as pines go, they do tend to like a little bit more water in my experience. So,
And I found that if you do not thin their needles out, that's when things get really out of control. So I have an older one that I've had in my personal collection that was was grown from seed probably about 20 or so years ago by someone else. I acquired it, and it's been a lot of fun maintaining it. It's a beautiful tree, and when it's not doing anything, it's really nice to just appreciate, like, because it's an evergreen. I don't mess around with a lot of evergreen plants like that. And so when I get to look at it in the wintertime, I'm like, oh, this thing looks awesome. And then I could do a little bit of playing around with it. But work got ahead of me this season with a lot of my other repotting stuff that I need to do. And it got extremely dense. And then because I didn't clear out enough needles, now I have like 5 or even sometimes more candles in like some locations on one spot. And it's gotten crazy. So I had to go through last week. Yeah, this was last week. I went through and I just thinned it out, because I was like, this is too much. And it was getting all, like, the needles were curling, and some of the my tips were not so much needle cast, but just that brown tip that they get when they're just like, there's not enough nutrients for them to support that much foliage. So yeah, it's a learning curve. And that's one of the things that we want to talk about with Japanese black pines, because we had an episode a long, long time ago where me and Jonas talked about growing them from seed and a couple of things there, but no one really ever talks about the stages of maintaining them and what that's like. You know, we talk about how to grow them and keep them alive, and that's very important, but there's other things that you should do to make sure that you can continue to do those, you know, things to grow them out or find them. So there's, and I'm just going to put my 2 cents in, because I know you have a lot more experience than I do with them, because you're working with them on a daily basis, where I'm only growing seedlings, and I have really early stock. Like I've gotten seedlings that I twisted really young, and I've been growing them for about 2 or 3 years, and I've got like a 2-inch trunk on some of them, which is decent.
That's pretty good.
Because we have a long growing season, and they also, we double their growing season here. So, but that doesn't mean that I already have quality trees. Like, I'm still growing those. So from my experience, because I'm more of a grower when it comes to my nursery too. So my experience is Japanese black pine they're either in grow out mode, and you're building the tree, or they're in refinement, and there's hardly a stage in between. It's very difficult to do that. Whereas with other species, you can actually have like a grow out mode and then refine it again.
Mm-hmm.
So am I correct on saying that? I feel like that's sort of a hot take on them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's like there's a point where when they hit a certain age, and I'm not as well versed in actually developing them from seedling or cutting, but I know that when they hit a certain age, you have to start decandling and your refinement work, and you can continue to build the tree as you do that. But then you have both young parts of the tree and old parts of the tree on the same thing. So we'll have, you know, we've got a number of trees out in the yard right now that are kind of in that development phase where we still have, we let the tops go and run to kind of keep the strength growing, but the entire tree underneath that section is completely refined. Refinement. It looks so silly. But then there've been a couple that we've transitioned from that stage to the more refined stage where we finally cut off those runners and we're just working on full refinement. So black pine is an interesting one where you don't, you know, we're kind of like with another pine or with a deciduous, like you get to the point of growth where you're like, okay, I'm going to style it now. And you style it and then the whole thing is styled and you kind of refine it from there. And it's like, you know, kind of a more linear process. With the black pine, it's like you kind of have to grow it and refine it at the same time. So it can get a little bit confusing and silly. And I think that's where a lot of people get hung up is because, like I said, I don't have a lot of experience actually growing them from seed and like moving from that, okay, it's a 2 or 3 year old tree. Now I'm going to be now I'm going to move into the, you know, starting to refine the lower branches of it. I had a tree in the yard this year where I had to start doing that with it. And I realized I didn't really know how to do that. So I had to kind of think through, okay, if I make this cut now, what's going to happen in the fall? And then next year, it's like you have to make these cuts thinking ahead. But because I've done so much maintenance work on them, it's like, oh, okay, I know how the tree's going to respond, so I can figure those things out,
and
so I can make the right decision. But it's still a very complicated puzzle.
yeah. My experience from growing them from seed and kind of studying the methods that both Jonas and John Yeats is using. Is kind of calling your stock. And so you go through and grow out your seedlings and see which ones have better needles because they're going to be individuals. Because pine trees, big Japanese black pines, one of those unique species where you can actually see the major differences in needles. And I've seen this also I mentioned this when I went to the ABS show in Denver last year. I saw all the ponderosa pine trees with different needle formations and shapes.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. So Japanese black pines do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So some needles are curly. Some needles are really long. Some needles like actually kind of flop over a little bit. So they all have these different tendencies and these different DNA kind of makeup to them. It's very interesting. So you call your stock or your little guys or girls or whatever you call them. So you go through them and you look at which ones have the best qualities. And of course, you're going to have to weed through that. And some people take seedling cuttings of Japanese white pine, and that's really interesting. But at the same time, you can do that and get great roots. But I learned the hard way, if you put it in too coarse of soil, then you get roots that don't really form nabari. They just turn into these long running looking roots, and you don't really get you get like an exposed root system that would make a great niagari, but you're not going to get a great base for just regular nabari. So you have to put them into, at that stage, you have to put them into a more organic mix when they're seedlings. Otherwise, they will get a fine fibrous root system to make those roots kind of chunk and come together and fuse together like that. It's kind of weird. Because the whole struggle is getting the pine trees from the Japanese black pine from inorganic to bonsai soil. And that could be quite difficult, especially if you have something like that at Telperian Farms, that whenever they had all those trees come up, and they have all these Japanese black pines that were grown in bags, and they're hacked down with crap soil, you know. So, but it's one of those trees that you want to start if you can start it from seed in a pot, and then you can work in your bonsai soil over time, and you never really have to touch the core. It also makes it really easy to repot them as well. So it also depends on the quality of your bonsai soil and the quality of your roots, and if it falls apart when you take it out of the pot. So they're not as fibrous as other pine trees as well. So they're, my experience, I take them out of the pot and there's just running roots like an elm tree, you know?
Yeah, I think from what I understand with growing them is that the first couple of years you have to do root work like every year to really get your roots placed where you want them to be. But because they're so young and they're so strong, the first couple of years, I think you can pretty much bare root them.
Yes.
And at that
year
point,
year one, you can,
Yeah. And at that point, you can get some of your bonsai soil in there, at least into the core, so that hopefully you don't have to go back in there too much. But yeah, it can be, development of black pine is, John Eads has been doing some really good presentations recently about how to do that. And then I know Jonas focuses a lot on black pine, and actually his blog, I will give that a shout out because he's got a post on black pine where he goes through all of the spring work and fall work with photos and shows you exactly how to do it and exactly, you know, why you do it. Like it's very clear. And that really helped me the first few times I was doing black pine for sure. So.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
Hey everyone, this is John Eads, founder of Left Coast Bonsai and proud supporter of the Little Things for Bonsai People podcast. I'm breaking into your feed today to let you know about a few exciting things we're doing here at Left Coast Bonsai. We're a small, family-owned bonsai nursery that's focused on producing high-quality bonsai plant material, as well as sourcing hard-to-find supplies for growing in your own yard. For many of us, winter is a time to pause and reflect on the year ahead. Now's a good time to decide what seedlings and supplies you need for the upcoming season. We have a large selection of seedlings that will begin shipping out mid-February for our spring season. You can also order baskets, felt bags, or aluminum wire. In addition to the seedlings and supplies, I also teach classes and study groups on a broad range of subjects, including growing trees from scratch. I hope to hear from you soon and would love to talk about how we can support your bonsai growing journey. You can find us online at leftcoastbonsai.com, on Instagram at leftcoastbonsai, or send me an email at talk@leftcoastbonsai.com. Cheers!
One of the things that kind of defeats people with Japanese black pine is that there's so many different ways that it's described how to care for them, which is unfortunate because they grow so differently in all the different zones of the United States here. And all across the world, of course, they're going to grow different. Some places can't even have them because it's way, way too hot or it's way, way too cold. So they have to sit in this kind of medium spot where they're the happiest. But they are one of the easiest pines to grow. And in Japanese bonsai, they are the easiest pine tree that and most accessible pine tree. So they're considered the king of their bonsai culture. So that one of the conflicting things about them is that you'll get when to cut the candles. And everyone's like, when the hell do we do that? Because in Louisiana, we could do 2 decandlings.
That's wild to me.
Yeah, we can.
That's crazy.
Yeah, because it's so hot. And we actually have a heat up stage. So we have July, which is a great time to do it, which you guys probably do it, is around July. Correct?
No, we're done. Like, if it's not done this week,
no, it's not happening. Yeah.
Well, then you're just really behind.
So we can decandle basically now until July. And Bjorn, when Bjorn was teaching bonsai oriented around Nashville, where he was at, he was cutting on 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
No, and I was just going to mention, we had the heat up stage of summer here, and then mm-hmm. we hit August, and then we have a second spring, and it'll actually get hot again after, like, it'll be hot, and then it'll cool off a little bit, and then September will actually be another time we could do it, and they'll grow a little bit more, and then they'll stop. We can't do it as drastically if we did in the middle of the year, but anyway, what were you saying?
I was just going to go into like the actual, like our actual scheduling. So like black pine is one of the trees that when you're doing this kind of regular routine decandling work, this is something that we actually do by calendar date. We don't care how far, like what the candles look like. If like we have to do it by like the first week of June where we are right now in Portland. And so if you're in a slightly cooler climate, you'll actually want to do it a little bit earlier. And if you're in a warmer climate, you're going to, like you said, Evan, you're going to want to do it a little bit later. You're like a month later than us for this. And it sounds like it doesn't make sense, right? Because like, okay, if you're in a cooler climate, wouldn't you want your candles to be farther along when you cut them? But actually you don't, because what you're doing is if you're cutting them early, even if your candles are very small, you're cutting them early, which gives them a longer time during your growing period, which is going to be shorter. You have a shorter growing period, so you're giving them a longer time to regrow, essentially. And so we're cutting them in June, and that gives them until October, when we'll go back through and make we'll do our second round of black pine work. If you're cutting in July, you have a really long growing season, so they don't need to be, you know, hardened off and have their second work done by October. You know, you have into whenever to do your fall work. So you can cut your candles a lot later. They don't, because you have such a long growing season, you don't have to give them all that time to regrow.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's really confusing for people. So the colder you are in the springtime, kind of the sooner you cut your candles, and the warmer you are, the later you cut your candles. And it can vary by, you know, a week to a month to, I don't know if I've seen a 6 week window, but I guess you could do up to 6 weeks. So, so this time of year, what I've been doing, and so this is what you do with your spring work. All of your spring work sets you up for your fall work, and your fall work sets you up for your spring work.
And
so before we go in and cut our candles, we have to do some needle pulling. And so, because your tree is dominant at the top, right? It's the top of your tree is stronger. You're going to pull more needles at the top of your tree. And so we usually divide our tree into kind of thirds. So with the top third, we pull all of our needles except five-ish. The middle of the tree, we pull all except six pairs of needles or so. And the bottom, say we leave seven pairs of needles. And then we go through and we cut our candles based on the strength of that shoot. So, but even when we're needle pulling, you know, it kind of varies too. So even if you're at the top of your tree and you're trying to leave five pairs of needles, but you have a really, really, really strong shoot, or that shoot has really, really long needles, maybe we'll only leave three. And then at the bottom, if you have really short needles, or if it's a really weak shoot, sometimes we'll leave 9 or 10, or we won't pull any needle. We'll just cut the candle. So it's like, here's your rule, you know, 5, 6, 7 on your tree, but then you kind of vary it based on the nuances of your own tree.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, that's kind of difficult to explain.
It really is. You really have to kind of see it.
Yeah. So basically, to kind of reformat that in the way that I'd interpret it, because is that needle plucking happens in the early springtime.
Nope. We're doing it right now, the same time we cut the candle.
Okay.
Step one. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Because I did that to my older pine as well. So I mm-hmm. balanced the needles. So I plucked out stuff, especially in the top. And now I can see into the tree pretty good. So you said in thirds. And so I remember when me and you had done a spruce tree a while back. Mm-hmm. I was up there where we pinched all the shoots at the top and then really mm-hmm. didn't touch the bottom. Mm-hmm. Because that's how conifers usually function. So mm-hmm. I left a lot of my needles intact on the lower mm-hmm. branches that I felt were weak. And then I cut out pieces that were they were shaded out that were just mm-hmm. basically dying back. Mm-hmm. To allow space and energy for the new needles and the new candles to come in. So reduce the needles by literally by pulling them out. And that's mm-hmm. one of the confusing things to people is that pine trees are both weird and confusing because deciduous trees, you remove the leaves or cut back to a shoot or a new bud. I mean, mm-hmm. a bud that you want to take off. Mm-hmm. And then with the juniper, you're getting closer to how a pine tree kind of habits, where you clear out old needles that are no longer necessary, and you're cutting back tip shoots to encourage mm-hmm. back budding. So it's sort of the same. That's kind of how it breaks it down in your mind, because seeing the needles is what throws people, mm-hmm. you know. So
yeah, so. We're doing our spring decandling. So we've gone through and we've plucked our needles, right? So at the top where we have the strongest part of our tree, we've pulled all of our needles except for five pairs, and they're kind of arranged like a star around that candle. And so then we go in and we cut the candle, and we always leave a stub for our candle. And the longer and stronger your candle is, the longer your stub is going to be. And so on a really strong candle, we leave about a quarter of an inch of a stub at most. On a weak candle, we cut off as much as we can. We try to leave very little stub. And this also feels really counterintuitive, because you would think, okay, on a weak candle, wouldn't you want to leave a stub to help fuel, you know, the new buds? But actually that stub is like a sugar sink to the tree. And so it actually slows it down. So you leave stubs on the stronger areas of your tree to help slow them down. So at the top of your tree, where you have, you know, stronger growth, you have fewer needles now that you've plucked your needles and you have cut your candles, and you probably have some longer stubs up there. Then at the bottom of your tree, you're going to have maybe seven pairs of needles left. So a few more needles and likely some more short stubs, but this really, it varies shoot to shoot on your tree. So when your tree's done, it's going to look like a plucked chicken. Like, it's going to look kind of ridiculous. And that's okay. That's what you want, because what you have then is your tree is going to regrow over the summer and throw out new shoots. And you need to have enough space for all of those new shoots to grow, because you're going to have at least two new shoots growing at each point that you have cut. So if you have to do a little bit of thinning, cutting out leggy stuff, cutting back to stuff further on the interior of your tree to replace, you know, the branches that are getting too long, you can do that now. You can also do that in the fall. So this work right now is critical. If you miss a decandling, you can set your tree back by 1 to 5 years, because it's really hard to, you know, if you have a strong candle that's 6 inches long and you don't decandle that, it's going to take a long time to move your whole branch back that 6 inches. So decandling with black pine is pretty critical, particularly for especially if you have something like Shohin, you know, that you have to keep really small. So
yeah,
very important stuff.
And for our listeners, that when the candle is cut, just to clarify this really quick before mm-hmm. we move on to the care guide, the candle extends up, it's white, and it has like a little fuzzy look to it. It has a tip mm-hmm. on the top.
Yep.
You're going to cut to the base of that. You're going to remove it completely. And Carmen said you even leave a stub on mm-hmm. some of them. That's fine. And you're removing all of them. Except for...
Mostly.
So if you... See, that's so another thing too. Yeah.
Right. So if you're growing out your tree, thank you for mentioning this. Assuming you're still growing your tree out, we often will not decandle something at the top, because that's going to be our runner that we're going to let extend and continue yep. keeping up the energy of that tree. If we have a really, really, really weak candle, that's almost non-existent on the tree, we don't cut those. A lot of times we won't cut interior candles that look really weak. But if you have anything, you know, and you'll be able to look at your tree and tell, like, there's kind of a range of like, okay, this looks big enough to cut to, oh my God, that's huge. Those are the ones you cut. Your stronger ones, you leave more of a stub. Your weaker ones, you cut nearly flush. And then in the fall, you come back and you revisit, and that's when you're going to do your shoot selection. And I'll talk about that real quick before we jump into more of a care guide, because this is like part two that's super important. So over the summertime, you know, your trees are going to regrow. They're going to put out new shoots wherever you cut a candle, and they'll throw out anywhere from 1 to 3 or 4 or 5. Very similar to like when you cut back an azalea and it throws out a new whorl of shoots. Black pine does, you know, looks very similar. So in the fall, you come back and you make some shoot selections. And so you want to cut down to mostly, in most places on your tree, you want to leave 2 shoots. If you have a really weak spot on your tree at the bottom, sometimes we'll actually reduce it to 1 shoot in order to let that shoot have more strength going directly to it and strengthen it. At the top, sometimes we'll leave 2 or 3 shoots just to make it a little bit, to kind of slow the top down, because if it has more growing points, it has to divide up that energy more. And so it'll kind of slow that area down. This is a good time to do pruning. And then after you've done your shoot selection, you want to pluck needles on your tree to a point where it looks balanced. So you're not counting needles, but you're, you know, really thick areas of your tree, you're pulling some old needles there, really thin areas you're not touching, so that overall, when you look at your tree, it looks about the same kind of density throughout.
Yeah.
And that's a good time to wire as well in the fall after you've done your shoot selection.
And that's usually the time that they look their best too, mm-hmm. is after wiring.
Yeah. And you know, that's probably why a lot of the shows in Japan are in the winter and early spring, because your black pines look really nice then. As you've, you know, you've just had your everything wired out, all your shoots are free grown, your tree, the density is pretty similar overall, and it's probably about when they're looking their best.
So. Yeah. Black pines, from what I'm hearing, is balance, energy balance, and more balance. So,
yep.
And it's confusing because you also said that in order to get them to be stronger in a spot, you need to reduce down to 1 strong shoot, I mean, mm-hmm. Which is simply essentially the same thing, so that will be strong. If there's too many, then the energy will be divided.
Mm-hmm. It but feels very backwards. And like all of black pine is backwards. And that's one of the things that confused me for years. I finally feel like I've grasped it. I'm finally able to decandle black pines quickly. Yeah. I'm finally able to get it all done, and I'm very proud of myself. Yay. But it's incredibly backwards. Like trying to explain this to somebody, especially like on a podcast when you don't have a visual.
Yeah.
It's a little bit tricky. So I would definitely recommend going over to Jonas's blog and searching for black pine. And he does a really good, clear explanation with photos. And I'll try to get some clips too of,
We'll put them on, Instagram for some reels. Bonsaitonight.com. Go over to blog and he has a search bar, type in Japanese black pine, and you will be overwhelmed by the amount of articles this man has written about Japanese black pines. But not a sponsor of the show or affiliated with us in any way, except for he's a really cool guy and he's a very good bonsai artist when it comes to Japanese black pines. Mm-hmm. But care guide for them. So we'll knock that out real quick.
Sure.
So we went through a lot of the pruning process. So I feel like that's if you want to do like a pruning guide on it, just rewind this episode 20 minutes mm-hmm. and you'll get pretty much a lot of the stuff that you need to know. So pretty straightforward. Once you learn, it's a learning curve. And I would just say on difficulty of like learning how to prune a Japanese black pine, it's like it's from the scale of tiger bark ficus is a 0 to like Japanese black pine is like a 10.5.
It's probably one of your most complicated, along with like something like an azalea. It's a very similar process, but it's confusing until you've done it. I mean, I think I've done black pine work for 6 years in a row now, and finally this year, I think last year was when I finally started to feel like I've grasped it. So it's taken me like 5 seasons to get it, and so like it takes time. It's okay. And granted, and I'm also working on more black pines than probably most people have, and maybe I'm just slow, but you know, it takes a while, but
yeah. So
you will get it.
We're not at our hot takes section yet, but one of my hot takes just really quick is that you can't really learn how to work on a Japanese white pine unless you work on a refined one first, because growing it out doesn't teach you anything about how to take care of them.
Correct. I feel like the development of a Japanese black pine is, it's not totally different, but it is. Growing a Japanese black pine and maintaining a Japanese black pine are two different things.
Completely different things, yeah. So, pruning them, go back, like I said, a little bit to the needle pruning process, the needle plucking process, I meant the candle pruning process, the needle plucking process, and then shoot selection in the fall. That's all detailed for what we just said. And then as far as wiring, that's going to be done in the winter, fall and winter time to straighten everything out and light up all the future shoots and candles. And then, of course, we also had a little bit of discussion on propagation. So they can be grown from seedlings. It's very easy to do, but you can take cuttings, but it's very challenging.
They're better grown from seed for sure.
Yes. There are grafting things you can do. And that also is pretty technical, where you can do a silent graft. And I've seen people, even here in Louisiana, I've seen a couple of people have success with grafting, silent grafting Japanese black pine. It's pretty cool. And it's strange and it looks alien. It looks like it's from on another planet that you're doing this type of stuff, because it just doesn't make any sense. But you can literally cut the candle off and then silent graft it, and then it'll grow. It's like, what's happening? They're a highly technical tree that I would say there's a lot of techniques that if you don't master a technique, the tree will just straight out tell you like, nope. And it just,
you'll know.
Yeah.
Tell you fast.
Yeah. So like Japanese black pine versus tiger bark ficus, where tiger bark ficus, you could mush a trunk or a shoot or a cutting into the tree and with a thumbtack, and it'll just take. With Japanese black pine, there's no cutting corners with this species when it comes to that type of stuff. What's even more interesting to me is when people take like ponderosa pine, and I've seen this in Michael's collection, and they graft black pine onto them. It's so awesome.
It's really fun because ponderosa needles can be so long, and so if you have a tiny ponderosa trunk, you're not going to be able to get your needle reduction down, but you can reduce black pine needles quite a bit. So we've got some trees here in the yard where, you know, they're ponderosa trunk, but black pine foliage. Yeah. Those are really fun. Really, really fun.
And I bet a lot of people, I mean, I had never seen that. I'm from Louisiana. I've been doing bonsai my whole life here. Go up to Michael's collection to see ponderosa pines that I'd never seen before. And then I'm told that there's black pine grafted on it. It was just like, where am I? Like, I felt it was so out of place. But all this stuff happens, you know.
And like, actually, having the black pine foliage on a ponderosa trunk actually increases their cold hardiness. So those ones sometimes will leave the ponderosa with black pine foliage out all winter long, whereas the black pine on their own roots have to be protected. We still, you know, I still pull the ponderosa ones in often when it gets real cold, just because, you know, I don't want anything to happen to them. But they are more cold hardy, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. So placement, like we were saying earlier. So when it's not too cold and it's not too hot, Japanese white pine do really enjoy full sun. It's a pine tree. Conifers are very much alike, where they will tolerate a lot of sun. For me, in my range where it gets really hot, we actually do shade them in the summertime, and then and then mist their foliage to cool them off.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they just, if they're boiling, then they'll start getting, they'll get sunburned. Their needles will get burned up. They'll get weak. They'll get trunk sunburned. Like their trunks will get sunburned and the bark will just peel off in the old blue sections of your tree. Root damage can happen from their pots literally boiling the water in the pots. So you just, like Carmen was saying, like you say, like they get too hot. They can get too hot.
We're cool enough here. I mean, even on our hottest days, we tend to shade the pots and keep things a lot more moist. But they sit in full sun here year round. If we had a week of 100 or above, I think we would probably move them into a light shade for sure. But I think almost anything would have to go into light shade at that point. But yeah. But generally speaking, they love sun. They want to be in the sun, but that does mean that they will need more watering. So they do not like to get as dry as something like a ponderosa. They get watered pretty regularly throughout the summertime as they dry out. So.
Yeah. And it's a fun tree with that too, where I tell people, you tend to overwater your trees. This is another one of those trees where in the summertime, if you're scared that it's going to dry out and you water it, you're doing the right thing. But of course you don't want to be out there watering it like three times out of the day, but you want to, go check on it when it's midday and you're like, oh crap, this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a touch and feel type thing. I tell people, and it's surprising to me how many like beginning and bonsai enthusiasts that I have to have this conversation with, is that if things don't seem right, like if the tree doesn't look like it's having a good time in the sun,
mm-hmm.
and you walk out there, put your hand on that pot and then imagine yourself in that pot, like how that would feel. So that's why me and you had done some episodes a while back where we talked about watering and the process of watering in the summer, where it helps replace oxygen and also it helps cool, like naturally cool from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff really goes a long way with Japanese black pine in the summertime. So pests and diseases, do we have any thing other than that? The craziest thing that happens with me is needle cast will take over. Mm-hmm. Needle cast is a ring fungus. It's very obvious. It will ring, literally stripe the foliage and then cause it to die back to that ring. And if it continues, it will continue to stripe the foliage down until it completely defoliates the tree and kills it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty dramatic and awful.
Yeah, needle cast, I think, is, of all the pines in our yard, the black pines have the least problem with it. But they are susceptible to funguses, so we do preventative sprays of fungicide on all of the pines, including the black pines, though, like I said, they don't seem to have as big of a problem with it as some of our others. And it may just be you have a different species of needle cast down there, than we do here, or, our pines are just lucky. But they can also get root rot from being overwatered, or overwatered and then too dry and then watered again, having like a dry pocket that can like cause eventual root rot. So that can be something to watch out for. That happens, I think, more in developing trees than if you have something in a bonsai pot. I feel like, usually you're pretty much on top of it. But those are really the only two issues that, I've seen. And borers, of course. Borers are always a problem. But again, I don't see that as much on the black pines as I see on the ponderosas or the limber pines and stuff like that. But they are treated just like all of our other pines with preventative fungicides and insecticides, just to, be on the safe side.
Yeah. So like close to pest free, but one of the things that I always recommend to people who want to grow Japanese black pine in a more humid, hotter zone that I am in, Southeast, is that one of the biggest issues that I've had at the nursery, we had to learn the hard way. This is one of the things that we had to be transparent about here, is that we had a bunch of Japanese black pines, and they were all grouped together and they'd gotten really, really bushy. And then we had a top watering automated system on them, and that was turning into a mist. And that mist was, one got needle cast, and then
Then they all got needle cast.
Exactly. So misting your trees is one of the worst ways that you can actually, like, we at the nursery, we had the automatic water. So we have to regulate the way that we supply them with water. So we have a system now where it's droplets as opposed to mist. Because droplets is going to be, exactly. You say good, because that actually does fix a lot of issues. We had a lot of fungus issues on hawthorns and hornbeams as well.
Hawthorns are the worst.
Yeah. So that mist is literally a wall of vapor, of moisture, that it just gives a catalyst for the funguses to just ride on a current. Mm-hmm. And so they just travel through the air so easy that it just can infect every plant in that area. So we did get a lot of needle casts, but when we took them out of that area, it's kind of funny. Japanese black pines are crazy little trees sometimes, where we have these seedlings that we grew about almost 5 years on some of them. And a lot of them had needle casts really bad. And then we put them out in our backfield where they only get the droplets from the traditional sprinkler head.
Mm-hmm.
They had trunks. They died back on their tops, and the trunks almost went completely, like, they were like deciduous. Like, they were completely barren.
Oh, wow.
And then some of them came back.
Nice.
And I was just like, okay.
They're tough little trees. Yeah. They couldn't tolerate that maybe more than once in a year, but they can sometimes tolerate quite a bit.
They'll surprise you. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
But yeah, like you said, Carmen, like, all right, for our listeners, don't push them like that. Don't do that.
You think
that's cool to, like, whack them back to stubs and have, like, two needles on it. And then, yes, sometimes you will get a flush on old wood, but, man, you are pushing it, especially on high-value trees or trunks, don't do that. This is something that just happened to us at the nursery.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that the changing your water system worked, because I remember you were having an issue with the funguses. Yeah. And, and that's, you know, it's really arid here in the summertime, so if we do get needles wet, it's not a huge issue because they dry pretty quick. But this time of year, where we have so much rain and humidity, can be a real problem with us with when it comes to funguses. So
So repotting. So this is another one that is a very interesting process to kind of go through with these pine trees. Is that this is how we learned how to do it, because Louisiana has a very strange winter. I'm just going to say, like, I have to say strange because some years I get 80 degrees at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
And then some years I got 30 degrees on Christmas. I've got February this year was 70 degrees. And then the next week in March was like 90. So it's all over the place. So, but the best way that I do it here in a warmer climate is that I lift the trees out of the pot during the winter, towards the end of winter, and I look for white roots starting to emerge from the tips. When I see those white roots starting to really elongate, I can actually start repotting. And that's my window to repot. And I know it's going to be different for cooler climates. So when do you guys, you guys probably have more of a calendar date for it, whereas we can't go off of that because of how sporadic our winter tends to be here.
Yeah, we, just kind of lump it in with all of our repots in, you know, February/early March.
The same as all the deciduous
same as
trees and stuff.
Everything else, pretty much. Yeah.
And so, for Louisiana, like that, like in southeast United States, we could do that, but you have to keep in mind that where Carmen's at in Portland, it's a little bit more, like, they have a longer cool period in their spring. Like, they're still cool right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's been close to 100 degrees here to, like, last couple of weeks ago, you know, so we got to get that repotting schedule time frame. We got to do it then, because if we wait too long, then it's going to be way too late.
Yeah.
So repotting, just take them out, maintenance prune the roots back. Don't do anything crazy. Like, don't bare root them. Especially
do not
when they're
bare
older.
Your tree. Yeah.
Yes. If they're weak and they still need something, you need to get old soil out, you can do the pie slice repotting process like you do on an old Yamadori tree, where you go in and take out old soil in one section and then go back in with quality soil.
Mm-hmm.
if the tree is really struggling, you might need to go into a deeper container to promote more drainage in the tree. If it's grown, like the roots are swelling, they're always getting bigger. And something mm-hmm. else we have to watch out for pines, for Japanese white pines, because they tend to, they're one of the pine trees that will actually kind of plate out and spread wider. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we'll get them we'll get them out of these containers and they're like pancaked up against the side of the container. And it looks cool, but it's not great because that's going to lead to some really major drainage issues. So get into high quality soil, get really good drainage, deeper pots than most of your bonsai, and make sure that you're, of course, doing the regular practices with your bonsai soil. So pumice and akadama, or lava and akadama, just to make sure you have good drainage, but also some retention there. As far as moisture goes. So it depends on what your soil mix on adjusting for your range as well. So up in Portland, I know you guys do a three part, whereas we can't put hardly any akadama here because it would stay way too wet. We'd have to actually go way down on our percentage of akadama.
Yeah.
So particle size on soil, medium.
Medium, largish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bigger than deciduous, but not so big that it's like you're just putting it in parking lot. Yeah.
Right.
Just make sure that you're not using just pure organics, because pure organic soils is going to really mess you up.
Yeah.
This is going to be a tree that you're really going to want to start working on. If you're a newbie to bonsai and you're not sure about soil mixes, this is another tree where you're going to have to teach yourself how to mix your own soil, sift your own soil, make sure it's a high quality pumice, lava, akadama, whatever you're using, and your blend is correct and even. Because if you don't, then this is another tree, like we mentioned earlier, this tree is going to tell you that it's wrong with issues that come up with it. So and styles that they're suitable for. I can't think of a style that I haven't seen a Japanese black pine, and it's just as versatile as any other species, to be honest.
Yeah, I think, you know, real generally you see a lot of, you know, kind of miyogi, informal upright with Japanese black pine. You don't see as many cascades or slanting or almost never a literati, but that doesn't mean you can't do those. I think I've seen it with all of them. I kind of like it when a Japanese black pine, maybe this is a hot take, I kind of like using a Japanese black pine for not a traditional Japanese black pine style, because you always see them in that style and it's great for them, but it's kind of fun to, you know, play around with it and do something a little bit different. So generally it's, you know, you're like, picture what you think a pine bonsai would look like just what would AI make a pine bonsai look like?
Yes.
That's your Japanese black pine. Like, that's the kind of cookie cutter classic.
That's the reason why they call them Japanese black pine. They're the king of Japanese bonsai. They are, I mean, when I think of Japanese black pine bonsai, I think of really strong miyogi, like fat trunk, beautiful taper, really
big old canopies,
robust trees. The bark on them is grayish, almost black. In fact they are close to a black pine because there's different degrees of, I mean, because they are called a black pine, but that's just because of the color of them, is that they tend to have their bark is a little bit deeper, sometimes chunkier, and so that kind of gives them that shaded appearance. But they can also do a little bit of a feminine appearance as well, so they don't always have to be such a masculine chunky tree. So
yeah, you don't see a lot of elegant black pines, so I always love coming across those.
Yeah, something that's a little bit more, like you said, something not so heavily traditional, but there's no denying when you see a really well-made Japanese black pine and a miyogi, like chunky sumo or really robust tree, it's almost mind-blowing.
It's like, that is like, I think one of the ultimate, to be able to make a black pine look like that, like you have mastered that technique. Like, I feel like that is, like you know what you're doing. That is it may not be your favorite tree in the whole world because it's, you know, it maybe it doesn't speak to you as, you know, something more artistic might, but you see it and you're like, whoa, that was a lot of work and a lot of time and a lot of technique to get that tree to where it's at. And that's very impressive.
Yeah. So a little bit of a hot take on Japanese black pine too, is that, and this is a good segment. I mean, to go back to kind of jump into our, we'll do a couple of hot takes and then we'll wrap it up. And then say our favorite. So we'll do it like this. We'll say a hot take and then we'll say something we like afterwards. So it doesn't seem so harsh. So hot take on Japanese black pine is that this is a technician's tree.
Oh yeah.
Like we were just saying, like the more technique you put into it, the better the quality of the bonsai. And they are, a lot of people say that they are the true bonsai tree, and I could see that. Also, junipers are like the, you know, the traditionalists, the purists in bonsai would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, my other side of that hot take is that not only they are a technician's tree, but it's very difficult to pull off a naturalistic feeling style with these trees. That's not contrived feeling still because of the way they have to be controlled.
Yeah, I feel like most black pine is definitely that, like what we imagined a tree would look like in nature, you know, like it is contrived. But I think that's like almost the whole point of the black pine.
Yeah.
Because it is such a technique heavy tree. I think I agree with your hot take.
Yeah. Next hot take. I don't know if I should say this or not.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of doing hot takes now. I was all like excited. And I'm like, oh gosh, we're going to get canceled on my
birthday.
Like I said,
one hot take and then we'll say something nice after.
Okay.
American bonsai isn't really bonsai anymore.
Oh no.
Because of the heavy use of American containers, American stands, and American style displays instead of a traditional 3 points or preferred species, people are starting to break into a different type of bonsai that is not Japanese anymore.
Hmm.
I know that's a tough one. The landscape is evolving. And it is different.
It's very different. This is something that I struggle with a lot because I feel like a lot of American bonsai has not been informed by Japanese tradition. So it's not necessarily breaking out of the confines of tradition to pursue some kind of artistic purpose. It's maybe, oh boy, in ignorance.
Yeah.
But
These are not hot takes to be like gentle with. These are challenging.
We should do a whole other episode here for this.
Yeah, no,
I think that like in some aspects of what we call American bonsai, I really like where it's going with some of these American containers and American stands and some of these kind of creative pursuits. I really enjoy them, but I think that it's so important that people are informed by tradition, because I don't feel like you can, I don't feel like you can truly do
not,
you maybe. Can't do the bonsai justice without understanding the history and the technique of where it came from.
You're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good one. It's a good one, Evan.
Yeah, no, that's one that's supposed to like, it's supposed to make you kind of go back a little bit and think like, okay, so there's Japanese styles and there's always been Japanese styles for a reason. Mm-hmm. So our formal upright, our informals, our slantings, our cascades, our forest plantings, our, you know, our clumps and our rafts and all the other variations. And then there's literati, which is technically a Japanese style. Mm-hmm. It's more of a Vietnamese, and then that's where we start tipping the scale of like we get into American styles where we get into like the Walter Paul-esque or the Dan Robinson-esque kind of like natural styles, and then we're gone. We're on a different scale. And so it just kind of, you know, it is changing a lot. So
I think you can do naturalistic styles without straying too far away from traditional technique. But because I feel like we do a lot of that here in Portland, but I think, yeah, it can get real complicated real fast.
Yeah, just sit on that one for a little while, and we can revisit that thought on another episode.
You know, and it's interesting because I was having this kind of the same conversation with a student last week, and it was interesting because the longer I've been doing this, the more I feel like I understand why there are the rules and the restrictions, you know, in quotes, the restrictions of that are within bonsai. It's like that is what makes it bonsai. And so you kind of have to have these things in order for it to be bonsai. And if you take too many of those things away, then it's not, you lose the essence of what traditional bonsai is. So like, this is a great conversation to have that, like, at what point are you just putting a tree in a pot versus are you doing bonsai? So
where's the line? Okay. So quick, now that we're hot take, now we're going to something that we like, favorite bonsai thing. Tell me something you like about bonsai. Favorite thing.
I think my favorite thing is how every day something is different. Like, you can go look at your trees every single day and there will always be something that has changed. And you don't necessarily realize that until you're gone for like a week. And then you come back and you're like, everything is totally different. But there's always something a little bit different every single day, whether it's like the color of the leaf or, oh, there's now a mushroom in this pot, or like the shade of that pine is a little different, or, you know, just kind of watching them grow and change. It's very ephemeral and very fleeting, and it really kind of gives you it makes you pay attention in a way to things around you that you wouldn't necessarily look at otherwise. I think it makes you have a bigger appreciation for nature in general because you're seeing things on such a small scale in your own trees, and then you can kind of stop and then you look at the trees in your neighborhood and you start to notice all these other little things that are happening. And so it's like the most magical thing. I love it.
Yeah. Totally agree on that. With like, I did a lot of pruning and a lot of setup, and I did some structural wiring on some of my deciduous trees in my collection. And then I sit back and then I'm like, okay, well, they're going to be like this for about a week or two. And then the time passes and it's like, I don't even really realize it. Because the way that they grow, and then one day I go out there and you, like you said, you look out there and, oh, they changed. They changed so much more than I realized. And they filled in, or the work that I did gave me literal fruition. I got something out of it that was rewarding now. And like you said, with the mushroom thing, is like, I went up to my Yatsubusa corkbark elm, and it's got these tiny, tiny, like little mushrooms growing all on the surface, like right next to one of the big giant surface roots.
And I love that.
And it just looks like it has that fairy tale feel to it where you're like, I'm in a little tiny world right now. And those are the moments that you capture in bonsai, that you work and work and work on your trees. And then you get these moments of solace and like break in between those where you see those things. You're like, oh, this is why I pruned and wired this tree for 6 hours yesterday. Because I can enjoy this part of it. So yeah, that's definitely a huge part of it. But yeah, another favorite thing from me, and then I'll let you give a hot take, and then I'll give a hot take. And then we can wrap it up. So another favorite Frank thing for me, I just wanted to put this out there. I went through my collection the other day. I love Southeast natives so much that I counted my collection out. I've been kind of going through my collection and swapping trees, you know, either deciding, oh, this tree needs to go for sale, or I'll, you know, donate this tree. I want to introduce this tree into my collection. And I counted, I have 15 unique native species in my personal collection currently.
Very good.
And that's fun. And I have about 40 trees. And amongst those trees, there's 15 unique species from Texas to Florida and Carolinas that are all unique to my range. And I think that's really cool.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I told somebody one day, I was like, I want to eventually like rinse and repeat until all my trees in my personal collection in my home are all natives. But every once in a while, like, I can't get rid of my oldest crepe myrtle that I've been growing for since I've been doing bonsai, or or that Japanese black pine we were discussing, or, you know, it's difficult to do those things. So what hot take do you have to drop real quick?
All of mine are too hot.
No, I said a really spicy one. You can't have one that's too bad.
I know we've talked about it a lot, but I do think that using traditional Japanese soil components is right up there with having really high quality trees. I think that there's something about those soils that I'm going there that, you know, you can't get with a lot of the substitutes. And yeah, you can grow bonsai and other things, but I think that, you know, there's a reason that it's been used for so long, and there's a reason why it works. And it works. I don't know. Maybe that's not hot enough, because I think we talked about that in the last episode. But
we can push on it even further by saying... what was that?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Yeah. So, yeah, like California bonsai, for a long time when John Naka and Ben Oki were coming up, they were using decomposing granite in their soils. And so a lot of people were doing that. And then down in where I'm at, Randy Bennett, Guy Guidry, and Von Banting are all using Haydite because it's cheap and easy to get. And I know
I've used both of those things in bonsai soil before.
Yeah. And you'll see that stuff printed in old magazines, old bonsai magazines talking about soil alternatives, online forums about people using cat litter. You know, diatomaceous earth mixtures. And yes, like, all that is good on a budget, but then you will have, this is the hot take section, this is gonna hurt to say, you'll have budget trees. So yeah, but so like, it's just the way it is.
I like
is.
It better when you do the hot takes.
Because I'm a little bit more like...
You're braver than I am.
I've said some really stupid shit in the past, but like, I have to just put up with it. Like, it's just who I am. But anyway, I do agree. I do use Akadama. I use pumice. And that's how I'm getting a lot of, even my native trees. Mike Lane, he uses Akadama in his tropical trees. And
I love it.
And traditional components. And he orders Japanese soil components. Like, he gets the Shohin mix bags from Japan. And uses that in his Shohin, and he has high quality stuff. So it's just something that we have to kind of put out there as professionals. We have to think about these things, and there is clearly a hobbyist level. This is where we don't want to be too harsh. We don't want to say, you know, if you're going to have really budget soils, then your trees are never going to be that good. But if you're learning, then it's no issue, because me as being a bonsai grower, more than than Carmen being a bonsai curator, that's where the line is starting to kind of draw. There is where I grow out stock, and I grow my trees in the ground. I grow my trees in pine and organic mixes, pine bark and organic mixes, to get them to grow fast and develop, so I can get them into the stage where they go into quality bonsai soil mixes. So if you're learning and you're developing, then that is totally fine. But if you're going to sit there and try to use something like a Haydite mixed with just pumice, and then garden soil mix that you got, it's going to work.
It probably won't work the best.
It won't work the best, and it won't last forever. In fact, we had pine bark in our general, like, generalized soil mix that we sell at the nursery. I took it out because the soil... was collapsing, because the pine bark was getting eaten up by the trees, and then it was becoming an issue. So it was removed.
I come from using non-traditional soil components before using traditional soil components. And I've seen the differences in growth and both root growth and top growth and overall health of trees and the speed of development. And there's just something about, you know, these traditional components that just, it works better. And again, I think we said this before too, like you can grow stuff in almost anything, but it's going to make how you water different. It's going to make how you fertilize different, and a lot of times more complicated or more involved because you have to make up for these, you know, qualities that your soil lacks. And you can make up for that if you have the time and the energy to do so. But I think it's just easier to use the thing that works.
Yeah. When everything becomes streamlined in a quality soil, and mm-hmm. then you get to that point where you're working with your trees at that point where you have to get there and to understand it, mm-hmm. of course. But yeah, it's the quality soil and the trees going into an actual refinement stage with that quality soil will change everything about how you understand it. And it just, mm-hmm. it is a learning thing. So that's one thing I have to say. So like my last hot take for this episode, and then we'll close it on this note, is that pineapple is actually good on pizza.
Yes, I agree.
Oh, what? I thought that was going to be the opposite.
No, I love pineapple on pizza, and everybody who doesn't is
wrong. Oh, man, we just lost a lot of subscribers. Oh, man.
That's wrong with these people? I mean, did you know? Here's a fun fact for everybody, because in case you didn't know, that pineapple is a berry.
What? Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that, because they're in like a, they're kind of like in the... what's that called?
It's a bromeliad.
It is. You stole it from me. Yeah, they're in the bromeliad family. Yeah.
Yeah, and like in general, I don't like bromeliads, but I like pineapple. It's delicious. I think it's the only bromeliad you can eat.
They're very interesting plants, and when you heat them up, when you cook the juices, and then it kind of gets that caramelized to it, and it gets that sugary caramelization. Literal chef's kiss. Best thing you put on a pizza. And I'm sorry that you don't like enjoying a dessert on your pizza, on top of your pizza while you're eating pizza. That's right. That's on you. So, but yeah, whatever. I'll close it there.
Whatever.
For some of our longtime listeners that like are just like, wow, that hot take was too much. Well, hope to see you around. I'm just joking now.
Yeah. Bye. No.
They're like, wow.
They're like, I'm removing my Patreon subscription.
I couldn't even get to episode 100 because of that. But no. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. We'll go ahead and do the Patreon readout and close this up here. So thank you guys so much for subscribing at the $5 level and us getting to say your names, your beautiful names every single time and going through this. Start off our list with Vicky Auth, Boyd Snellgrove, Ricky Ruins, Joshua Bentley, Stabby Chappers, Joel Jenkins, Justin Knight, Backyard, Bonsai Australia, Ben Crean, Greenwich Gardens, Taylor Peacock, Chase Pertweet, Austin Atkins, Karen Codswell, Louis Torres, AC Castle, Bonsai Marine, J.A.S. Potts, Chris Fossoon, Timothy Arsenal, oh man, I was doing good, Nancy Hoffman, Joshua Roth Tools, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, David N., Nate Murray, Nancy Hoffman. Did I say it twice? I think I did.
I don't think you did.
No, I did. Various bone size. Sean Seaman. Gilbert, who is? Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm laughing myself right now. But Gilbert, you know who you are. David J. Baccaccini. David Smith. Hist Warrior. Chantel Wynn. Byron Myrick Pottery. Dale. Eddie Fernandez.
Dale. Every time. Dale.
Joshua Dominic. I'm just going to say Joseph. I'm sorry, I said Joshua this time. Wesley Thompson, Kyle Forward, Angel Niblock, Andrew Willingby. I'm going to say it until I think it sticks. That's Willoughby.
Yeah, Willoughby.
Awesome. Right? Got it. Nailed it. Kyle Forward, of course. And then our specimen best buds, Unryuin, Christina Carforia, and Bill's Bayou. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks,
and,
Bill.
Yep. And so go over to Underhill Bonsai. Go look at some stuff that I wrote. Go over to Underhill Bonsai Store. Look at some trees that I grew. And you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook, Underhill Bonsai, as well as me, Evan Pardue. Little Things has its own Instagram page. Go to Little Things for Bonsai People on Instagram. You'll see various things that we share there, reels, critiques that we've done on previous episodes. If you're interested, go, you see some nice trees at a show, go to the description below and see what episode it lines up with. The more traction, the more likes and shares that we get, the better the algorithm, the more Bonsai people we can outreach to and get our info out to. And then for you, Carmen, where can they check out your stuff?
You can find me on Instagram and the Facebook at Becoming Bonsai, and check out the Purple Pot Society, the national women's group that encourages and educates women in pursuit of bonsai.
Of course, I'm a member of the Purple Pot Society. You don't have to be female to join. Anyone can support women in bonsai. Please do. Also, Mike Lane, go over to kitsunebonsai.com. Go see what Mike is up to. Him and baby Amelia have been very busy recently. So we will always forgive him. We will always love him. But Mike is a Southeast Florida bonsai artist, and he is going to specialize in tropicals and other things in his range in the American Southeast, especially South Florida. He does in-person workshops a good bit. He travels a good bit. He's actually going to be the headliner at Bonsai on the Bay next year in the Texas for the next Lone Star Federation show. I think that show's in September of next year, or wait. Yep, that's in September of next year. Yep, that's going to also include Jennifer Price and Jonas Dupuis. And that's going to be an awesome show. So you guys can look out for that. And then for, let's see, I had one more shout out. Oh, yeah, we'll just go ahead and shout out one more time. Matt O'Donnell, go over to mattodonnell.com. Go check out my boy. He's editing our show. He's doing a really great job. Obviously, he's edited near 100 episodes for us. I mean, we're getting there, bud. Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. And of course, go listen to Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know, his own podcast show where he interviews people who have various interesting careers and jobs, and his takes on how they make it work. And it's a really really insightful show. So, but yeah. Happy birthday to Carmen again.
Yay,
so
happy birthday to me.
Yep, I know it's going to be a little late. This episode is going to be a little ways out, but
I celebrate all month long, so whenever anybody says happy birthday, I'm like, cool.
Yeah. I usually say it's like around my birthday. I usually do like a week of celebration.
Mm-hmm. At least.
I'll do a victory lap as I get one more turn around the sun. So, but yeah, you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.